What is up and welcome to another edition of the Bruin Bible. Will Decker, your host in the house. We got a very special guest coming through, a guy that I found on Twitter. Great dude. Big UCLA football fan. I like some of his takes. We're going to be talking about a bunch of different things going on as well. You know, his takes on Chip Kelly, the upcoming season, different players like who are going to make an impact in this college football season. Mr. Ryan Ramonita in the house. What's good, brother? How you doing?
What's up, man? Good to be here. Thank you. I'm doing really well. Doing really well. No complaints.
Awesome. Second time is the charm, as we like to say. We tried to film this a couple weeks back. For some reason, the audio did not come out clean, but I got to make it happen with my guy, Ryan. We got to make this whole thing work. I want to go back to the beginning. And you're a UCLA football fan that is originally from the LA area. And I think when a lot of people think of LA football as a whole, you know, from people on the outside, they think it's a USC town. We clearly do not believe that, you and I. We are big UCLA homers. I mean, I run a podcast called The Bruin Bible. I mean, I got to be a homer, right? What made you a homer for UCLA football in the first place, going back to the beginning of this?
So for me, it was just growing up without a pro team here, right? I grew up a big Packer fan because my dad was a big Packer fan as he grew up. So I just kind of, you know, grew into the Green Bay Packers, but they're not local. They're not anywhere nearby. I've only been to a preseason game. So I grew up a big UCLA football fan because of my dad, and he used to go to games with his grandfather, my grandfather as well, my great-grandfather. So they used to take him all the time. I think my great-grandpa was actually a USC fan, but my dad, somewhere along the line, it got twisted, and my grandpa after that became a UCLA fan. And I think it was – I think if I remember correctly, it's because they liked the jerseys more, which is the accurate take. And my dad watched them all the way through the 70s, 80s, you know, up until now. And he played football, and I played football, and I just kind of grew up on that. So watching UCLA, watching those colors, every game at the Rose Bowl since I've been alive, it's been awesome.
You're spot on with the jerseys. The baby blue – going with, you know, the gold. I mean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful combination. Do you remember your first UCLA football game, or like when the spark, you know, kind of initiated for you to fall in love with the program?
So my first game, if I remember correctly, was the first one that I can remember is a game against Oregon, and it was a rainy day, and they were wearing green and yellow. So it must have been, you know, pretty far back there, but I don't remember. I just remember we lost. I actually went with my sister, my cousin, my female cousin, and my grandmother, because she got free tickets for a school thing. So I remember sitting in the general admission south side of the stadium. It was kind of drizzling, but it was kind of warm, you know, that weird September weather. And I just remember we sucked and we lost. And I don't remember much from that game, but the first game that I actually have a memory of is UCLA playing Rice at home in 2006. And my dad took me to that game. It's the first game that I remember, you know, from start to finish. I remember the players, what happened. And then we got Tommy Burgers after that. And that was it right there.
Dude, that's a hell of a day you're describing for me back in 2006. Yep. Was there a player that, like, got you involved in the program that, like, that was your guy, like, back in 2006 when you kind of really ramped it up? I think MJD was drafted by then. I think Mercedes Lewis was as well, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Who was your guy, kind of like 2006 and on, that, you know, if they were giving out jerseys, you could still get that one, that, like, that would be the player you would want to rock?
Yeah, so it was MJD for a while when he was at UCLA. I still remember watching his Washington game. We broke that record and had the crazy yardage and the touchdowns up in Seattle. And then after that, it was a defensive player. It was Dennis Keys. And I always thought it was super cool because, if I'm not mistaken, he wore number 11 as a safety. And I just remember he was a thumper, man. And I really liked, he had the dreads going on, and I just liked his whole aesthetic. I really liked watching him on defense. The Bosworth twins, they were really cool to watch. I think that was more like 2008 through 10, though. Evan McNeil that made the pick against USC in 2006, right?
Yeah, 2006. Yeah,
13-9 game. So all those guys. Mercedes Lewis was awesome. I always thought he looked great, and it just worked out perfectly that he's a Packer too.
Yeah, man, I love it. You got to be pumped about Sean Ryan going there as well. I mean, this is, For my money, a guy that could have played left tackle in the NFL, they want to slide him on the inside. He gave up two sacks in his entire collegiate career, and like both of those were to Kayvon Thibodeau. This guy's a freaking stud, man. And Sean Ryan's gonna be a Packer. Where were you when you found out the news, and how excited were you to have not only a Bruin in your life, but now a Packer? So you get to follow him on two separate levels.
Yeah,
pretty damn cool, man.
Yeah, so I was actually driving to go on a date with my girlfriend, and I remember getting the little Bleacher Report notification on my phone at a red light. And the minute I saw it, I was like, oh, no way. So I texted my dad right there at the red light, and he was like, let's go, and we were both pumped. And I always liked Sean Ryan because I knew he was a great recruit. I loved his aesthetic as well, with his crazy hair and his stash and all that. And he was just a stud, man. He was consistent. It's a shame that we didn't get him for another year, but for him to end up on the Packers, they'll develop him into something nice. They're always rotating guys there, so I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him playing something that he's not used to, like a big center. Definitely a guard, but the Packers are known for moving guys around. Teaching somebody to snap the ball isn't too hard. I think the thing that they struggle with the most is shotgun snaps, and you can get that down pretty quick. So with his versatility and his footwork, I think that they're going to move him around and shuffle him around, and I'm excited to see him.
And the best linemen are versatile. They can play multiple positions on the line as a whole. Ryan's going to fit right in there. And I'm excited to kind of see his progression from the college to the pro level. I think he's going to be a very effective starter for quite a while. I want to kind of go through your process too on, some of the players that got drafted to the league this past year. Kyle Phillips, Quinn Lake was a sixth rounder, Greg Dulcich, my money, the best tight end in the entire country. You may not have got the reps that, Isaiah Likely or, the Colorado State guy whose name is escaping me off the top of my head. But, play for play, this guy was averaging close to 20 yards a catch, 2 years ago, and then he always showed up huge in big games. Give me your thoughts on Dulcich first. Let's start there.
Yeah. When he came in and he was a walk-on wide receiver, man, they just chiseled him up. I remember during the I believe it was the LSU broadcast, which I went to the game, but of course I rewatch the games if I attend them. So I've rewatched that game 1,000 times. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Brock Heward. Somebody said that he'd come in at 185 pounds or something like that, and they got him to a chiseled 185, 285, 255, sorry, or something like that. And to see him and the way that he developed and the way that he became not just like a relatively decent speed threat at the tight end position, but just consistent hands. I can maybe count on 3 fingers how many times I saw him drop a ball. Yeah. He was awesome to watch, man. And in that offense with the tight ends running the seams and the little quick pop passes and stuff like that, it was really cool to watch. I really wanted him to end up a Packer, but they weren't really looking for a tight end. So it kind of is what it is. And then on top of that, my uncle's a Broncos fan, so it kind of makes it a little worse, but just happy he got drafted. I really wanted them to take a look at Kyle Phillips for reasons other than his appearance. I think he compares well to like a Hunter Renfro type.
Yeah.
And I think that he's kind of a steal. I think he went in the 5th round, something like that. So a little bit further down, but that was about where he was going to go in such a deep wide receiver class. And I literally never saw him drop a ball. So really sad to see him go. I think that would have been awesome with him in the slot and Bobo on the outside. But I'm excited to see what he can do in Tennessee so long as he has decent quarterback play.
That's a big thing, right? So when I see him go to Tennessee, my heart kind of sank a little bit. I wanted him to go to the Chargers. He's a San Diego native.
Mm-hmm.
Herbert needs that kind of underneath route guy. Perfect combination there. I think the Chargers, for as good as a draft they have, they kind of whiffed in not getting Kyle Phillips there. Quinn Lake was also my dude. He's a friend of the show, came on. Could not be a more consistent safety in bigger games. The unfortunate inconsistency with him was the injury problems, right? I mean, this guy, play for play, you look at his good game tape and you're like, this is the best safety we've had in like 20 years. But it's just, unfortunately, the injuries kept him off the field for like 3 of those 5 years that he was here. So Quinn Lake, I think if he's healthy in the NFL, he's going to be a guy that's going to get some playing time and make the most of it, especially with that Rams development system that has hit so many times on some of those later round draft picks.
Yep.
Ryan, we were on Twitter this week, this past week, just even arguing about Chip Kelly. I'll kind of start it off. So Chip Kelly, the first 3 years were brutal to say the least. 10-21 as a coach. You can't defend that. There's no defending of that. However, I feel like through the transfer portal, he has found the stability he's been looking for at UCLA, something that's been sorely needed within the program. Because let's face it, you know, the standards to recruit at UCLA are the toughest in the Pac-12 outside of Stanford. Like, you have to have a very good GPA to get in here. Unlike the team across town, USC, they're willing to lower those standards for players to get in that have a lot of talent. You know, it just is what it is. We have to not only get great football players, but we have to get great, you know, students as well to kind of match that. With the transfer portal, as long as they're taking college classes and can transfer in, it goes down to a 2.3. So it is, you know, it's a very different kind of structure in how you can acquire these guys. Hats off to Chip for finding that loophole. And I think that's a huge reason why he's turned it around. I'm not defending the first 3 years. I'm excited to see where the future goes, especially this year. Easier schedule than most years. DTR coming back. Highest graded PFF quarterback in the Pac-12 last year. Charbonnet, I mean, we could do our own separate podcast on how excited I am for Charbonnet coming back.
Right.
He was a freaking stud. Give me your thoughts on Chip, because I think we differ in just our approach to Chip Kelly. And I want to get all sides of the fan base, because I think that's what makes it interesting.
Right. So I'm on the fence. And if you would have told me that back in 2017, I would have laughed at you. I couldn't have been more excited, man. I was all over Twitter. I was texting my friends. I was like, check this out. You know, it's the NFL. It doesn't work out for everybody. But this guy's a genius when it comes to college. I mean, Nick Saban was a bust in the NFL, you know? So I couldn't have been more hyped. And then the game against Cincinnati at home happened. And we had like 55 scholarship players. And I was at that game at the Rose Bowl. And we didn't know that it was going to be the Luke Fickell dynasty at Cincinnati. But still, they were coming off a 4-8 year. And they had a freshman quarterback. So, and for the most part, we should have won that game. And it was just like almost every other game that we played. We either got our butts handed to us or we probably should have won. And that was really frustrating. But then you kind of had to chalk it up as growing pains. So that was understandable. And he kind of tore things up from the ground and then had to build from there. But the next couple of years, and especially the COVID year, they should have been 7-0. That was really, really tough. That's when I started to kind of lose faith. But then again, I gave him the benefit of the doubt because, you know, it's a short year. It's a weird year. They didn't have all these practices and this and that. And it's all about reps with these young guys. Cause I mean, think about what you were doing when you were 19, 20, you don't retain a lot of information for the most part. And these guys are going to school, a very hard school. And then on top of that, you had the pandemic and football practice and stuff like that. So I gave him the benefit of the doubt again. But it was tough. So after this year, I was very disappointed. And it's kind of weird to say that after like an 8-win year. It sucked that we had the bowl game canceled. I really wanted that ninth win. Yeah. And I wanted to go too. And it would have been beautiful in San Diego. Petco's amazing. I've been there many times. But it sucked that it was canceled. And then it sucked that they blew so many games that they should have won yet again. And that's when the doubt started to creep in. Like, at what point do you win the games that you're supposed to? Like, I can excuse one or two games that are close, like the Oregon game, you know, there were outstanding circumstances, the Utah game, DTR didn't even play. So it is what it is. But if you chalk those up as your two losses, then you're looking at a 10 win season. But then you had that abysmal loss to Arizona State at home, that was really bad. And I didn't have to, that's like the first UCLA game I didn't even have to rewatch because I was at a wedding and I saw the score. I was score keeping the whole time and they just basically didn't show up for the second half. And that was tough. But for the most part, you got to just beat the teams that you're better than. And you even saw it for like the first half of the Arizona game. That team was a junior college team. And they played like butt cheeks for like the whole first half, you know. They only really put it together for like the third quarter, I believe, just to put them away because they were that much better than them. But that's where I lost faith. And the main reason I would say is because of his allegiance to his assistant coaches and Jerry Azzanero.
Yeah.
So God willing, or thank God, at least, you know, that's over with now. Cause if I looked at that guy's credentials, and no offense to him, he's more successful than I'll ever be as a football coach, but nobody was impressed when he got there. And then we couldn't have been more disappointed when he left. But you know, at least he's gone, and we've already got Ken Norton Jr. out there on the recruiting trail making some big impacts and waves. So I think that's huge. But this is the year. I think you got to get double-digit wins. You got to get 10 wins. if you're gonna get 6 years, wins or something like that next year, five even, like maybe we'll be okay with that, but you got to put together a 10, 11 win campaign with a good bowl win.
Dude, absolutely. And I think I'm with you on this too. If it does not come to fruition this year, I just posted a tweet. Anything less than 9 wins this year, if you look at the out-of-conference schedule, I think the anti-Chip crowd is right. I think it's time for him to, we got to figure something out, And
Yeah.
it's unfortunate if that does play out the way that I just described, because we just signed him to a 4-year deal with Jarman there, who was actually on one of our last episodes. But, I think those are all valid, things that you brought to the table. And I think it took him a lot longer to get the personnel in there to work. 2020, I know we lost, I think it was what, 4 or 5 games by a combined 15 points.
Yeah.
Also a COVID year. So like these aren't professional kids. You know what I mean? Like these are kids that are going to class and,
Well,
trying
now
to.
they're kind of professional.
Yeah, I mean, NIL, I guess, but
Yeah.
even at that time, they weren't getting paid for it, right? At
Right.
least over the table. So I think from my standpoint, the COVID year, it sucked. We should have won more games, but I would be more in the camp of throwing that out just because, like you said, they're 19, 20-year-old kids going through a pandemic. They can't, this is abnormal for everyone. Like, imagine being in college when that was occurring. That must
Yeah.
have sucked. So you mentioned like the no practice time. And the as an arrow thing is just undefensible, right? It is so garbage that he was our defensive coordinator for that long. I mean, you look at the defensive stats, for some of these teams, and man, we had 8 wins last year as the number one offense in the Pac-12. If we just had a little bit better of a defense, that's 10 wins. That's 10 wins easy right there, probably heading into the bowl game, like you said.
Yeah.
So I like Chip, but his allegiance to his defensive guys, like Bill McGovern's going to have to prove it to us. And at least for our credit, he's speaking to the media. Like that's a big step forward,
Yeah.
from a guy like Azanero, who like was just not taking like the blame for pretty much ruining these UCLA football teams
Didn't
point
have to
blank.
speak for 4 years.
Didn't have to speak for 4 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I hear where you're coming from. And if this year it does play out like that, I think you and I are on the very same wavelength. But I am very impressed with what he's done in the transfer portal. I don't think there's
Yeah.
any two ways about that. I mean, give me Charbonnet. Like, come on. This guy is going to be on the short list for the Doak Walker Award when all is said and done. And you're looking at Jake Bobo and Mwosu. We looked at the Athlon Sports, preseason Pac-12. They put those guys on the second team. They haven't even played a
Yeah.
snap yet for
Yep.
UCLA. That's damn impressive, man. So that's very, very cool to see stuff like that. So my faith is going to be restored if we can, get back to a 9 to 10 win season this year, which I think is highly attainable. And that brings me to my next question. DTR, he's also kind of a polarizing figure within the UCLA fan base. I thought he took a big step forward last year, specifically with that Stanford game. The guts he showed, got injured, came back in, threw the touchdown to put them up late in that game. And just the way he was able to finish the season, the way he was clicking. I mean, let's be honest, the USC game did not start off great. His first two passes were picked. After that was 6 touchdowns through the air, 2 on the ground, could not be more dominant. The following week, dices up Cal. I mean, he had big games. Big games. The turnovers were a lot fewer, than the years past. And I know people would want to point to 2020 out of that. He had 4 picks in about 4 games through that season because he got injured at the end of it. So, the interceptions were going to be a lot higher than he only had 6 last year to 21 touchdowns. The rushing is really what separated him last year. We've always been advertised a dual threat quarterback. We finally got that in spades last year, over 600 yards rushing, close to 10 touchdowns on the ground. When you combine that, I mean, he had 30 total touchdowns last year. He's coming back for that 5th year. I think there's a big chance this guy could be, first or second team all Pac-12 if everything goes to plan. Do you think that's a crazy statement?
No, not at all. I think he's been underrated the last 2 years, pretty easily. The maturation process that he's gone through has been really, really impressive. And we have to remember that, and I defend him all the time. So, and I know he's seen it because he's liked some of my tweets, just responding to, just terrible comments from people that forget that these are youngsters. But it's not outlandish to think that he could be first or second team all Pac-12. He doesn't do it. He can do anything that a Cam Rising can do plus some, And I know the media and the conference and ESPN and all that, they're all crazy over him, and he's got the hair and he's got the stash and they want more games. So, they're going to be all over a quarterback like that, but he's severely underrated. And I'm excited to see what he can do this year. I think if they're going to get to a 10 with a or an 11 win season, some kind of a really historic type season, it's going to have to be around the 40 touchdown realm. He's going to have to dwell around there. He's got to stay healthy. Although I do like our backups in case, there's some spot time there, which we're going to see. We're probably going to see Garbers play within the first 3 weeks quite a bit. But he's got to hover around that 40 touchdown mark for us to have a chance to win about 10, 11 games. But I've loved watching him grow. We just have to remember that he only started in high school his senior year. So he
I
came in
know.
really raw. And a lot of these quarterbacks from the Elite 11 camps and all that, they've been playing since they were like 7, 8 years old. So he's been a receiver forever. He's just getting the quarterback position down now. I think he's only 21 or 22 years old. I think he's 21. So he's grown a lot in a short amount of time. And to see that, he's got a rocket arm. He's obviously athletic and super fast. But most importantly, he's a really good guy, and he's a good leader, and the team loves him. So I'm excited to see him back this year.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of him taking his team, his linemen specifically out for NIL. Fun stuff there. They got
Yeah.
some food on the side, so you can see the leadership stuff there. I think 40 touchdowns is in, totally in play this year for him. And we talked about the dynamic athlete he is. He's clearly gained confidence with his legs. I'm excited to see that connection with him and Bobo next year. Give me your breakout players on offense and defense for UCLA next year, because I have two very specific guys that I am targeting in those areas. I'd like to see where you're going with that.
So, on offense, came on really strong at the end of the year last year, Kaz Allen. Been a big question mark as far as him staying healthy. I know he had a bad bout with COVID for a little while. May have been an academic issue as well, sprinkled in there. So he's been off and on as far as the field. But man, when he's out there, he is electric, and he's the fastest dude on any roster. I mean, they said it against the LSU in that game. All these guys, all these five stars, he's still the fastest person out there. So you put the ball in his hands, I'm really excited to watch him again. Jake Bobo for me is the big transfer on offense that I'm most excited for. I'm sure you're going to say that too. But David Cutcliffe said he's one of the three best and smartest players he's ever coached. And that's a lot of coaching experience there and a lot of players, a lot of pros. So that speaks volumes. I'm really excited to see him on the outside. I think that's something that we've missed, was a big wide receiver threat. I know we've had big tight ends over the last couple of years and stuff like that, but our receivers have been a little bit smaller. So I think pairing him outside with Logan Loya, a little bit taller receiver, is going to see some fade routes and stuff like that. Maybe a little stat padding for DTR in the red zone, faking some of those runs, those read options. He can toss some passes over to Jake Bobo. On defense, it's got to be the Murphy twins for me. I'm super excited to watch them. So I believe they've got 3 years of eligibility. But they're just big rock solid guys, man. And you're gonna have two of them sprinkled in into the defense. I'm not sure. I think they're gonna be playing outside linebacker. We'll have to see schematically how it works out. But with them and Bo Calvert, like, that's a pretty decent little outside linebacker crew, and some good depth. So I'm excited to see them get after the quarterback. I know they're aggressive. I need to see a little bit more tape on them, but we'll see how they translate to the Pac-12. I know they were two of the highest coveted defensive players in the Pac or in the transfer portal. And then for me, another defensive player is going to be Kane Medrano, and
Nice.
he's a little underrated, but he's a big dude. He's really big. I've seen him play outside linebacker and drop back into coverage a lot. I think they're going to start bringing him as more of a blitzing linebacker this year. Well, like I said, we'll have to see schematically, but he's a thumper. I've seen him on punt team. I've seen him on kickoff. He gets after it. And he's going to be getting some good playing time tonight. He's got some good experience over the last 2 years. He's got a lot of eligibility left. So I'm really excited to see him.
There's a lot of different ways you can go with this. And you mentioned the guy that I was specifically targeting on offense, Kaz Allen.
Yeah.
When you saw what he could do with the ball in his hands, specifically the USC game, but if you're UCLA fans like us, we've seen it all year. I mean, the Hawaii game has that contested 42-yard touchdown grab. Unreal. LSU game, you'll know this because you watched it multiple times. The offense gained confidence, like literally got all of their confidence on offense to start the game. When he caught that like 27 yarder towards the left sideline, it's like, oh, we can make plays against this SEC team. This guy can ball. Like, this is what he does. And it was just, You know, it's Chip Kelly finding his DeAnthony Thomas in Westwood. That's the way I look at it. This guy is a spark plug. He's going to be one of the best kick returners in the nation next year for everything that I've gathered. He's going to fit seamlessly into that punt return role that, you know, Kyle Phillips had the year before. He was, you know, the last 3 years, he's been great at it. But just every time that Kaz Allen got the football, good things happened. And it made you wonder why it did not happen more last year. So I'm looking forward to more of that. Bobo is definitely a guy that I'm looking for, but I don't even think we can call him a breakout. You know, we're expecting second team all Pac-12 already, you know, so I think that's a big, big step forward for him. You mentioned some great guys on the defensive side, the Murphy twins being two of them, right? The best thing with those guys is you're getting two pass rushers just coming in that are, you know, have the same level of talent, same build. They're identical twins combined for double digit sacks last year. Only going to get better as upperclassmen. So I'm with you on those guys. Madrano was a great pick too. But the guy that I'm specifically targeting in that area, Devin Kirkwood, I think this secondary on paper, when you look at, you know, Azeezy Hearn coming, just a solid starter in, you know, the Division I football ranks from Wyoming, coming over, making plays. Jalen Davies, the Oregon transfer. Like, this guy was highly recruited, you know, got had offers from Ohio State, Oregon, teams like that. But Kirkwood's the guy that just has a ceiling for me that screams NFL if he's able to put it together. And we saw a little bit of flashes. He made that game-sealing interception against Washington last year. Mm-hmm. When you look at the cornerback size, it's, you know, it's the 5'10", 5'11 guys. This guy's 6'4" on the outside. Four-star recruit coming out of high school. He's got the frame. You know, he's going to be playing a lot more this year, and I'm expecting big, big things from him. But, I mean, how many times have we said this? The secondary was the Achilles heel of the UCLA team. Mm-hmm. With these transfers, I think we've put ourselves in a position where it could be one of the strengths of the defense if they're coached up the right way and put in the right scheme. So I'm really, really excited to see what the secondary is. Ryan, this has been so much fun, man. I got to get one more question for you before we leave. Yeah. Mount Rushmore of UCLA football players, since you've been a fan.
Oh, boy. Brett Hundley, easy.
Easy.
MJD.
Nice.
Mercedes Lewis. Let me see. Somebody on the defensive side.
Anthony Barr, Kendricks.
Anthony Barr, yeah. Eric Kendricks. Those are easy. Somebody that's underrated. I forget his first name, but Carter, linebacker. He played from like 05 to 08 or something like that. But yeah, he was a local LA kid, and he was a beast
Reggie
too.
Reggie Carter.
Reggie Carter, there you go. And I think he played a little bit in the NFL as well, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, the basic guys are going to be all those guys. And then, God, I wish I could put Josh Rosen on there, man.
Oh, man, you and all of us Bruin fans, man.
Yeah.
Yo, Ryan, thank you for coming on, bro. Had an awesome time having you on the Bruin Bible. Looking forward to talking to you soon, my man. And, hey, Bruin Bible, we are officially out.